Today's program has been brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit internationalculinarycenter.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
This is Sherry Bayer, and you're listening to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network, coming to you live from Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Today is Wednesday, February 5th, and this is the fifth show of this series, which is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talents in the hospitality industry. So today we're going to be talking restaurant design, and my special guest is, I will introduce him in a moment. I'll keep you waiting to find out who that is. And on every episode, I will start out with my PR tip, and then we're going to do speed round questions, restaurant news discussion, solo dining experience of the week, and the final question. As your host and the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip off the show with my PR tip of the week. Okay, so today's tip is dedicated to the subject line. Yes, you heard me right. I'm talking about your email subject line. Now, you may think it's not important, but it is, especially when it comes to pitching the media. As press people may receive hundreds of emails a day, and they will hit the delete button if they don't know what your email is about, simply because they don't have time. It's not that they don't want to read your email, it's just often a time issue. So, your subject line needs to get their attention. And that doesn't mean use all caps. It means to include essential information, so that the person receiving your email knows what it is about without opening it, whether it's a press release, invitation, or query. You can think of it like Twitter. You have a limited amount of space to get your message across. Remember, subject lines are your first impression. It needs to be good. Okay, so I'm excited about my guest today. It is Glenn Coben of Glenn & Company, an architectural and interior design firm in New York that specializes in hospitality and retail sectors. Glenn founded his company in 2000, to provide customized designs that realize each client's vision while challenging and engaging his customers. Some of Glenn's restaurant projects include, or have included, Old Homestead, Del Posto, Miguel Sanchez Romero, The Marrow, and Carbone. He has also designed hotels such as Fashion 26 and Trip Times Square South, plus corporate interiors for Sony and Nike Town. Before starting Glenn & Company, he was a principal of the Rockwell Group, and he's a graduate of Cornell. So welcome, Glenn.
Thank you. Thanks, Sherry.
Thanks for coming out. Now, those listening out there don't know this, but Glenn was super kind to record my very first pilot episode with me that unfortunately none of you are going to hear because we changed the concept of the show. We thought we did a good job.
And it was fantastic.
Fabulous. And I'm so appreciative of you coming back. And when Glenn came out, he brought me a little gift. He brought me a number one mug, as indicating for the first show. So I've been looking hard in for a number one, a number five. I have not been able to find a mug. So instead, this is good. I brought you.
Wow.
Do I get
to open it on?
You can open it on air.
Wrapping paper. Chocolate.
You can't go wrong with chocolate.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you.
You're welcome. It's from La Maison du Chocolat, and they didn't have, well, I asked for a 5-piece set. They didn't have. So I got a six, which is perfect. Episode 5, episode 1, we got 6 chocolates.
Awesome.
All right.
I love it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
So, let's start with your background, and I know you went to Cornell. Now, did you study design? What was your career path that got you into restaurant design?
Well, to get to restaurant design, it was a very circuitous path. I did go to Cornell for architecture school, and I am an architect. And I went in a very jagged line without a real true destination, other than the fact that I thought that I always wanted to go out on my own, you know, the sole proprietor kind of route. But as you said earlier, I worked at Nike, which was an amazing experience and had nothing to do with restaurant, but it had everything to do with understanding a brand and really taking a brand, in this case, a two-dimensional swoosh that had the ideas about what the brand values were and how do you create a three-dimensional expression of that. So while I worked as an architect before going out there, that was really almost, in a sense, me getting an MBA, both in understanding how a big business runs, but really stepping outside of this struggling architect in New York and finding out that there are bigger stories that one can tell. And with Nike, what I really learned was you could tell multiple stories in a three-dimensional way, and that became what a Nike town is about. And I've taken that with me in pretty much every place that I've gone from that point forward. So at Rockwell Group, we were really telling big stories. I had worked on the theater for the Academy Awards, the Kodak Theater, and that was...
These are all very big projects.
Really, really big projects. So when I felt as if I had not so much established a name for myself, but really established a set of skills that were beginning to erode as I was growing and becoming more of a corporate principal, I realized that the true calling or my true calling or my true passion was the craft of being an architect. And that's when I decided to go out on my own.
That makes sense. And so was it at Rockwell Group that you sort of transitioned more into restaurant design?
I think at Rockwell Group I began to learn about restaurants because obviously David was one of the true masters of restaurant design along with Adam Tahani, the late Larry Bogdanow. There were true top shelf, upper echelon restaurant designers that I could look to and say, these guys are the ones that really raised the bar. But my true breakthrough in opening up my own firm was pure happenstance. I got a call from somebody that I knew who said, hey, I know this chef. He is looking for an architect and a designer. He doesn't want to go to the big guys. Would you be interested in meeting him? And his name was Jonathan Waxman.
I know Jonathan.
Yeah,
that's a big name in the culinary world.
And I really didn't know him at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of what I have learned in the industry or what I bring to the industry, I learned a lot from Jonathan. It was a great experience.
And,
but that was my first restaurant project.
What was that restaurant?
Washington Park.
So that on the Upper West Side?
No, that Jams was Upper West Side. So Washington Park, Jonathan had closed Jams, and he was doing a bunch of different things. He was consulting with Delta, I believe, and he saw Washington Park, which was the old Rose Cafe on the corner of 5th Avenue and 8th Street.
Oh, okay.
Or 9th Street, maybe. And he saw that as... the neat thing about that restaurant is that when you walked in the door, you walked down 3 or 4, maybe 5 steps, and the kitchen was at the end of that sort of vista. And it was almost as if it was a stage. And it was kind of like this weird, put Jonathan on stage, and he was coming back into the big time. And it was a beautiful restaurant. It really, we captured the essence of California cuisine. It was a historic space. It was a landmark building, and there were some beautiful, beautiful bones. There was a terrazzo floor and a wonderful plaster ceiling that we had restored.
That just got me thinking about landmark space. That has to be a challenge or a difference working with landmark spaces.
Definitely a big challenge. We're working on a couple right now, and you know, you want to be respectful, and that's what I truly love about the restaurant industry. Is that every project, we're focusing on each project as if it's its own story. It has to be. So the chef that we're working with or the restaurateur that we're working with on a current project, it's their story. It's not my story. It's not somebody else's story. So each time we come to a project, we're starting with what is the essence of their idea? What is the essence of their menu? Where is their cuisine coming from? And then how do we relate it to the space? So if it's a landmark space, where we need to tie in some of that history. And if it isn't a landmark space, we have to bring in, make it, we want to make it as locally relevant as possible.
Makes sense. So when you started, you were you a one-man show, and then you've, how many employees do you have now? You've grown.
We have grown. We're still what I would refer to as a boutique-sized architecture and design firm. When I started, we had one project, and I had hired someone that had interned for me when I was at Rockwell Group, and the prospect of that was, of hiring her was, if it doesn't work out, you can always get another job. I'm not sure about me, but I think you can. And what was amazing is that she stayed with me for 5 years and went on to a great career and a great... I tell people that in a small firm, it takes a certain person. It takes a certain sensibility and a certain mentality. But they're going to learn at a much more accelerated pace than if you're going to a larger firm. So I like people that have been in both different kinds, both sizes of firms. But you have to wear many hats in a small firm. So to answer your question, we're about five people.
I understand that.
So now we're five people in addition to myself.
Great. And so what have been some projects you've worked on that memorable, some of your favorites over the years?
Wow. That's
a big question.
It's a tough question.
Well,
I only have one child, so I know I can say that my daughter is my favorite daughter and my favorite child. And we have this conversation about pizza. Is Roberta's pizza better than Rudy's pizza in the town where I grew up? How do you pick? Each project is special. I would really define the happier projects that were true collaborations. And the success of those projects was how involved and how collaborative were the clients. So, and I'm not picky about it. I think that we've done some pretty amazing projects, from Del Posto, which is the only Italian four-star restaurant in New York, to restaurants that have never been reviewed, like Brother Jimmy's Barbecue. So the range is important to me. And what's really important is that we're working with people that are truly passionate about what they do.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I was going to mention Del Posto because that is just the design. I mean, it's spectacular. You walk in there and it is a one-of-a-kind restaurant. It's just grand. And the staircase comes down. And I've always been so impressed that that's a Glenn Coben project.
Well, thank you. It's a humbling experience. It's a humbling thing to have somebody say that it's my project, but it was truly a collaborative project. Joe and Lydia were involved, and Lisa Eden, who has done a lot of the interior design and decorating of all of Joe and Mario's projects, was very involved with the project, and she was fantastic to work with because she was really a filter, and she was essentially the client. She knew what they wanted. She knew what they were thinking. But to think about 22,000 square feet of space and creating a restaurant that captures the essence of what their, not only their cuisine, but their service model. I mean, that was the big challenge, is in a space that we inherited that had many different levels, how do you create a four-star dining experience so that the Garadons can come out of the kitchen, that all those wine glasses that they're using throughout the course of the meal can go back into the kitchen and be cleaned. So
the logistics, not just what looks pretty.
I mean, what I love about your program, Shari, is that it's all in the industry. So we end up with pretty pictures, but the process that goes into creating these pretty or these beautiful places or these places that tell stories, that's probably the smallest percentage of what we do for in our days. But figuring out the logistics of, I mean, having designed retail stores, having done corporate offices, having done lots of different projects, the complexity of a restaurant, it's crazy.
It is crazy. And I remember reading, and you'll have to get my story straight on this, but something with the water level being so close to the river and having challenges with the basement level or...
Am I bringing back almost
bad
nightmares.
Dreams? I'm sorry.
Well, you think about with how a restaurant functions, the behind-the-scenes things like where does the grease trap go? And it's the lowest point of any of the plumbing. When we drill the hole through the cellar floor in the space, we noticed that it looked like it was water. It ended up being high tide around from the Hudson River, and the water was about 14 inches below the slab. So you have to think about, okay, we're putting in two elevators, we're putting in a gigantic grease trap, and we're putting in all these other things that go below the slab. Where's that? What do you do with the water when you're trying to cut those holes? So it's really, really cool.
A lot of challenges.
Yes.
I hope I didn't bring that back too much and disturb your sleep for tonight.
I might not be able to sleep.
Okay, well, we're going to take a quick break here. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
Tonight.
Awesome.
I just want to hold you. Ooh, so nice and tight. I ain't looking for no fight. Just let it go now. I ain't looking for no showdown, so won't you open?
You're listening to Let It Go by the California Honey Drops on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Tell me you want some more. Won't you stop all your keeping score now? Just let it go now.
Like what you hear so far? Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit heritageradionetwork.org today.
You kept on saying all the things that were wrong.
Hi, welcome back. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer, and you're listening to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. Today, my guest is Glenn Copen, and we're talking hospitality design. Okay, Glenn, so last week I had on Leslie Seibin of Seibin & Carr, and she specializes in restaurant real estate. I believe you two know each other.
Yes.
She was great on the show, and I asked her to ask a question for you, and she came up with five questions.
Well, Sherry, I was listening last week, and I was getting very upset with Leslie for asking so many questions.
Well, yeah, no, I think it's just because she wants to know, you know, get into what you do and find out the details. So, the questions were, and we'll see how much you can answer all of these. So she said, "How did you get into the specialty of restaurants?" She said she knows you're a natural designer, but why restaurants? And how do you vet your client and determine what they need to be doing design-wise? And how do you work with their budgets, small or large?
Wow.
So I know it's a loaded question.
How many hours do we have?
Well, maybe we could stay all day, but I don't know. We'll see when we wrap this up in 5 minutes.
No. Well, Leslie, thank you for such... softball questions here. Budgets. I'll start with why restaurants. I think that going back to when I was at Cornell, I was a teaching assistant in the hotel school. And I think that sort of started it sort of planted a little seed, and I never really thought about it in this way. Every once in a while, when you look back, you kind of go, hey, that made sense. That sort of connected some dots for me.
Yeah, well, but whenever I hear someone went to Cornell, I think hospitality, hotel management. I think of that arena.
Right, but I was in the architecture school, and what was really neat about the hotel school was that senior year project, the students had to either design a hotel or a restaurant. And so the professor at the time, it was Professor Compton, who's passed away, unfortunately, he mined the architecture students. So it was this really special experience, and it was almost a little cloak and dagger-ish that, hey, it was passed down from class to class, and if you knew the right person, they would invite you to meet with the professor and see if you would fit in. And I was fortunate that I knew one of the guys. We were out drinking together, and he said, oh, I've got this great gig for you. And I did it for 2 years. And the neat thing is that you're teaching students who were in their last year of hotel school how to draw and how to design. Now, that's a trip in itself. But it planted a seed for me. That, I got to hang out with some of these hotel students who were like, are you kidding me? I'm going to draw. I'm going out. I'm graduating. I already have a job. But they had to pass the class, so we had to figure out a way for them to draw and design and do it all at one time.
Okay.
So it was a really neat experience. Another connect-the-dot moment was after I graduated, I went to Vermont. I worked as a short-order cook for a couple of months. I wasn't very good. But it was great to be behind the line, and really it kind of foretold what I might be doing in the future. So it was, again, I didn't think that this is going to lead me somewhere. It was just a means to eating, basically, when I was skiing. But as I said earlier, the experience with Jonathan Waxman, really sort of pushed me into this idea that restaurant design or hospitality design had a lot of merit in it, and it segued nicely, and it blended nicely with this idea from Nike about storytelling. So what better than to hang out with chefs or restaurateurs and hear their story, hear their lives, and try and make it a three-dimensional place that doesn't overshadow the food, but truly complements the dining experience. So it's a great thing to do. It's really neat. And, We enjoy it.
Yeah, I think you've told me before how you spend a lot of time with the chefs and restaurateurs before opening, so you can get to know their personality, and because essentially you're creating a space for them.
Absolutely. I mean, we have to spend time together. The successful projects, although Romero was not a successful project from a culinary standpoint. I spent a lot of time with Miguel. One of my great moments was walking the Buqueria with Miguel and hanging out with him in his kitchen. Or when we were doing Carbones, Mario and Jeff and I would go out, and sometimes on a Tuesday night we would be dining at three different restaurants. So you really get into the whole essence of what they're trying to do, not just from a design standpoint, but really sitting there and hearing them talk about food and talk about service.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, I love that you do that, because you get, I think that's a good way to, I guess, do your research or figure out what direction to go.
And you get to eat pretty well, too.
Yes, yes, as I said, fun. And I would like everyone to know, because I think it's awesome, that you were nominated for a James Beard Award for design for the Miguel Sanchez Romero project in 2012.
Yes.
And that is... That was awesome.
It was really awesome. It was sad that the restaurant had closed, but it was
yes.
it's a true honor to be amongst the pretty small group of architects and designers who have been nominated. So it was a great moment. Very, very proud.
Yes, you should be. And Leslie, she did ask. I don't know if we can go back to her questions a little bit about working with budgets, small and large. Like, how do you deal with that?
I think it's all about communication, and a budget needs to be realistic. I very often tell restaurateurs or chefs, that when I interview with them, I say, whether you're going to hire me or you're going to hire another design firm, make sure that you hold a little bit of money off to the side as a contingency. Don't tell anybody about it, because this is New York, and New York, plan on things going wrong. Plan on things taking longer than expected. Plan on contingency after contingency. So whether the budget is very, very small or moderate or very large, it really pays to communicate and really be very detail-oriented about how much things are going to cost, but also how long things are going to take, because that has a direct effect on the budget.
And how long do things usually take?
A lot longer than you would ever imagine.
Planned, right?
Yes. Yeah, not to be a smart ass about it, but look at what's happening with Tavern on the Green. I mean, the idea that the gas can't get turned on at an amazing place like that, at a landmark place like that.
That always seems, from my experience, the gas being turned on to be, I would say, probably the number one delay. I don't know, licenses too,
it's
health
an
inspections.
Awesome,
but
gas is an awesome excuse to use, because it doesn't put the onus on any specific person. But, you know, we've used gas as an excuse over the years, and it hasn't been gas. I'm not saying that that's what's going on at Tavern, but gas is one of the first things that gets taken care of when you start a project. It's as simple as an engineer writing a letter to Con Ed saying, we request gas service. So it might be.
It might be. I don't know. It's supposed to open soon. This month.
I hope
so. This week. It was. I don't know. We'll keep reading about it and find out. It should be soon. And I wanted to ask what advice you have for someone who's looking to get into design specifically for restaurants or hotels. We didn't really talk about your hotel projects.
They kind of fall into the same category. It's storytelling. But advice? The best one is the advice that I got from Jonathan 14 years ago. Check your ego at the door. This is not your project. This is my project. And I remember that each and every time. There's nothing that makes me more proud when somebody will go into a restaurant like Carbone's and not really feel that someone designed it, and then say, oh, you designed that? That's amazing. It looks nothing like... Each of our projects looks like the project is supposed to look, but it doesn't look like another one of our projects.
You're very good at that. I don't see it. Every restaurant I've been to that you've designed is unique to itself. I don't usually know, I would guess, it is your project until you tell me, because they're special.
I remember when you said, oh, you designed Carbone's. That's great. It looked awesome.
Yeah, I had no idea.
Yeah. That's cool. That's great.
Very good. Okay, we're going to take another break and come back with my speed round and industry news. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
Oh, I like the way you do. Whoa, the way you took it so slow.
You're listening to Lovin' Like This by the California Honey Drops on heritageradionetwork.org.
No, I ain't never, 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 never had no lovin' like this before. And I just want to testify that you, yeah, you made me feel so good inside.
The International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
Yeah, I knew that you felt it too. And oh, yeah, you
Okay, we're back. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer, and my guest today is Glenn Coben. And it's time for my speed round questions. Are you ready, Glenn?
I'm ready.
Okay, I'm just going to give you a choice of two things, and you tell me your favorite.
And there's no explanation here. It's just
Speed round. We're just going to go through it.
Okay.
Quickly.
Like,
ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Eat in or eat out?
Eat out.
Wine, beer, or cocktail?
Cocktail.
Tasting menu or a la carte?
A la carte.
Small plates or large plates?
Really large plates.
Super large. Uptown or downtown?
Downtown.
Hotels or restaurants?
Restaurants.
Retail or residential?
Retail.
Meat for breakfast or meat for happy hour?
Breakfast.
Tipping?
Love breakfast.
I thought that was what you were going to say. Tipping or all-inclusive charge?
Tipping.
Dessert or cheese plate?
Dessert.
New York City or Westchester?
New York City.
Very good. Actually, I was on your website and I saw your Coben Kitchen.
Yes. That was just put on about 2 weeks ago.
Wow, I was impressed because I live in the city and I do not have a Coben Kitchen.
Sounds like a brand name here.
It does. It was beautiful.
Thank you.
So
thank you.
I
think I got fired from that project at some point. My wife just got fed up and said, somebody else needs to do this.
Well, you got through it.
Yes.
Yeah, I was impressed. Okay, so we're going to talk about some industry news. I wasn't planning to talk about this, but just a couple hours ago, I got really sad news. Daryl Robinson, who was known as the Dr. Mixologist, and he was a cocktail specialist, and he passed away. He was 50, and from the article I saw, there wasn't a reason why, but I'm pretty much in shock over this. I got to know him over the past year. We worked on Whitman and Bloom, a restaurant that opened in Murray Hill. I did the PR, and he was in charge of the cocktail program. And Glenn, you came to. We did the 10th anniversary party of my company at this restaurant.
The cocktails there were amazing.
Yeah, he's
so sad.
Yeah, he's so talented, and I'm really sad about it. It's just hard to believe when someone so young passes away, and you can't really, you start questioning why.
It's terrible. I saw you had tweeted something about it, and
I saw it on Twitter, and I just couldn't believe it. It's awful.
It's terrible.
So, unfortunately, that's my first news, and my condolences to his family and his friends, and I will miss you, Daryl. You're a good guy. Okay, so let's talk about something a little happier. It was a happy day for Anita Lowe. In the New York Times, she was upgraded from 2 stars to 3 stars for her restaurant, Anissa, which is in the West Village. And, I think that's awesome.
Fantastic. I mean, I haven't eaten there in years, but I don't know Anita, but, I mean, I couldn't be happier to see, the issue that came out, I guess it was about a month ago with women.
The women chefs, yeah.
And just to see someone like Anita, who has been steady and a real industry leader, get this kind of recognition, I hope that it just launches her into much more national notoriety.
Yeah, I do too. I dined there, but many years ago, and I remember it was a great experience. And she's, I don't know, there was a little Twitter conversation about other, like, who were other women chefs who've received 3 stars. So I saw this going on. I took some notes. It was Lydia Bastianich,
mm-hmm.
Ann Rosenzweig. Well, you worked with Lydia from Del Posto,
right.
And which is now 4 stars, but also Deborah Ponzik, who was at Montrachet, and Patricia Yeo from AZ. So that was the ones that people threw out there, but I think there's not many.
And it's certainly not enough.
Yeah, true. So congratulations, Anita. It's really, really happy for you. Okay, another It's a topic. I thought it was a really good read with in the industry. On ICE's website, and ICE is the Institute of Culinary Education, their creative director and pastry and baking arts chef instructor, who is a pastry chef, he used to be at Oceana. His name is Michael Laskonis. He wrote A Day in the Life of a Professional Kitchen. And I read through it, and I just enjoyed it. I had worked in kitchens a very long time ago, so it brought back some memories. But it was a very positive piece, just about what it's like to get there early in the morning and see the ritual of setting up and to go through the day and prep and then leaving at night when, you know, the streets are quiet, but you see your fellow chefs all heading home after an exhausting day. And I didn't enjoy it, so I figured I would bring it up.
I enjoyed it too. I think that if for those of us with our own businesses or have worked in even big businesses or companies, to go in early and to get a sense of what's going on. And I think I think Michael communicated that beautifully in the piece. Not to be a negative or a naysayer, when you put it up against Anita's review and you start mining it a little bit, it was a little bit too much from the male perspective. And I'm not saying as a pastry chef, because I don't want to pigeonhole women into the pastry world, but I was a little hypersensitive to the idea that it was really about guys, or, you know, that, hey, I would see another chef and we would see each other, or I'd see him on the subway after the shift. So.
No, that's interesting. I read that article before I read the Anisa article, so it didn't strike me the same way, but I totally see what you're saying.
Yeah, it was just pure context, that's all.
Yeah.
But I did read it in the review first, so maybe I was a little hypersensitive to it.
No, but it's a good point. It's a good point. And the last industry news I had was from the New York Post, and we touched on this a bit. Steve Kuzo wrote about storied New York City eateries to relaunch, but can old... Well, this is the title. Storied New York City eateries to relaunch, but can old flames be rekindled? And he was talking about Gallagher's and Tavern on the Green, both which are set to open any day now. And I guess, Glenn, I don't know if you're familiar with Gallagher's or these projects or... It will be interesting to see the redesign, I think, especially of Tavern on the Green.
Well, I think about Tavern, and I think about what people who were writing when Carbone's opened, and how could you take Rocco's and change it?
Right.
I mean, what a travesty to leave the sign and put Carbone's over the Carbone name over it, and look at what you've done to the interior of the restaurant. And that again has been in the news over the last month about heritage and what is worth preserving of the past. And we touched on landmarks, and I think that there's going to be, I hope it's not a major backlash, but Tavern is going to look very different when it opens than it did when it closed.
Absolutely.
And it's nostalgia and it's heritage, and I love Katie. I think she's super talented, and I wish them all the success in the world.
Me too. And that's Katie Sparks, who's the consultant, the executive chef.
She's the chef. Yeah.
And I think everyone's going to be looking also to what they have done and ready to critique.
They have a bullseye on them that's super huge.
It's a very big reopening, so
right.
Look forward to seeing what they've done. Okay, we're going to take one more quick break. We'll be right back with my solo dining experience on All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
You're listening to Cryin' Blues by the California Honey Drops on heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. It's time for my solo dining experience of the week. So, have you ever gone somewhere and as soon as you're there, you think, why have I not been here before? Well, that was my reaction last week when I went to Upstate Craft Beer and Oyster Bar in the East Village. It's on First Avenue by 6th Street. And I'd heard of the place. It opened in 2011. And it was on my list, but somehow I failed to get there until now. And now that I've been, I will be back because it's just a cool, small, very casual neighborhood place with awesome oysters, a limited seafood menu, and a great happy hour special. From 5 to 7 p.m. daily, you can get 6 oysters and a craft beer for $12. And at other times, the oysters are between $2.50 and $3, so it's still a pretty good deal. I was there for happy hour, and I was able to get the last seat at the bar. And I got the half dozen oysters. They had 3 varieties you can get with a happy hour special. So they were Duck Island Petite, Naked Cowboy, and Wild Oyster Bay. And I liked them all. They were really fresh. And then I wanted a little something more filling, so I ordered the scallops with risotto. And that was delicious, and it was $18. And they give you a dessert at the end for free, which is a whiskey bread. So it was a really great New York City experience with what I thought great New York City prices. And the service was very friendly. It was happening. As I was leaving, I met the manager, Steve, who I told I was going to talk about this on today's show. So if you're out there, Steve, it was really nice to meet you. And I think the East Villagers are lucky to have Upstate in their neighborhood. Glenn, have you been there?
I haven't.
I'm going tomorrow. No, it's you have to get there. If you go for the happy hour, you have to get there right at 5 o'clock or else you're not going to get in. It's popular.
I can't remember the last time I left the office before 5, but it sounds like it's worth it.
All right. Well, maybe take a break and then you can go back to work.
That's a good idea.
So if anyone wants to share solo dining experiences with me, you can find me on Facebook at All in the Industry. You can also tweet me at All Industry at Sherry Bayer, and I'm also on Instagram. Okay, so Glenn, now's your time to ask the final question. And next week I have on Andrew Ridgey. He is Executive Director of the New York City Hospitality Alliance, which is a broad-based membership association founded in 2012 to foster the growth and vitality of the industry that has made New York City the hospitality capital of the world.
All right, Andrew.
Do you know Andrew, right?
Andrew and I are on the board of Colintro.
Colintro is coming on as my guest later in the series, too.
Yay. Yeah. Yay. I've been thinking about what to ask Andrew because I know him and we've spent some time together at board meetings. And I thought, should I ask a question about the letter grades? But I think he's going to talk. I hope he'll talk about that without being prompted by me to ask the question. So I'm going to throw out.
I can ask him that on my own.
I'm going to throw out a different question.
Okay.
What will the Giants do about offense next year? And how far did he throw that ball when he was on the field?
I saw that photo. And that is a different question than I had planned on my agenda. So perfect.
I'm sorry, but I think that what the Hospitality Alliance is doing is phenomenal. And I have a couple of their checklists that we use as standard procedure when we're doing a restaurant. So if people don't know about the Alliance and what Andrew has been doing as an advocate for restaurateurs, people really need to know. So I'm glad that he's going to be on. And that really is what they're doing is phenomenal. So I don't have a lot of questions about it, but okay. I think there'll be people out there that should be very curious.
Yeah, I'm excited to have him on. He's a great guy, and I agree. I think he's doing great things. So, well, thanks for coming out here today, Glenn.
My pleasure. I mean, it's pretty sloppy out there, but
yeah, it's a very sludgy, snowy day in New York City. But we trekked through it. We got out here, and I really appreciate you coming back and doing this episode with me.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. So Glenn's company is Glenn & Company. His website is glennandcompany.com, and he's on Twitter and Instagram at Glenn Coben. And my PR website, for anyone interested, is bayerpublicrelations.com, and that Twitter Instagram handle is BayerPR. So if you missed the live broadcast, you can find us archived on heritageradionetwork.org and on Stitcher. Thanks to my engineer, Evan, and to all of you out there listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode of All in the Industry. This is Sherry Bayer. I'll be back next Wednesday at 4 p.m. Hope you'll tune in then. Have a good one. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.